like what really is the issue with regards to feeding the learners whilst the schooling is still in this situation of alternating days. And then which quarter, because this quarter is was October, November, December, which quarter are you supposed to be delivering LTSM in schools? Are you delivering in this quarter, or are you delivering in the first quarter, which is in January? The reason I'm asking that, I'm just taken aback that when we did our oversight in Eastern Cape early this year, many of the schools actually that we went to, we were told that LTSM is still coming, LTSM is still coming, and yeah, that's what I want to understand. Which quarter are you delivering LTSM in this quarter, or you are delivering it in the first quarter? So that are the issues from my side that I would want to raise. I think there is a hand of the Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Honorable. I just want to ask something that you can say if it is out of order. It is something that I was wondering about, the Bela Bill. Where in the process is that? I know it's not part of this report. I thought just maybe one of the officials might be able to help me with that, but if it's not possible today, then I'll understand that. Thank you, Jim.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. I understand that the DM has asked to leave earlier, and I'm sure she is no longer part of the meeting. Dr. Whittle, then can I give to you to lead the responses?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I noticed that the Deputy Minister is still with us, so I'm not sure if Deputy Minister wants to make opening remarks before we respond.
DM? I don't think
so. Maybe she has left. Yeah, maybe she has left. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Can I respond to the issues related to the monitoring and provision of nutritious meals to learners, and then invite the DDGs to respond to their areas of work? So in terms of the monitoring of nutritious meals, generally we monitor physically. So we would go travel to the various districts and provinces and monitor. But last year in this particular quarter, because of COVID, we decided to do that telephonically. There's an instrument that we've developed. It's called a monitoring reporting system that we use in the program. And we've got about just under 3,000 monitors that are employed on the program, and they are required to visit schools at least twice a year. Every school gets allocated a color coding, so they're either green, amber, or red. And schools that are red, we provide ongoing support to ensure that they get up to speed. Then in terms of the expired food and Honorable Adwunsa's question about what is being done to deal with that. So we get these reports from the media. We also have a NSNP hotline that we use where members of the community and parents can report any issues with regards to the school nutrition program. We then investigate those, provide reports to the provinces and to our minister, and then we continue to work with the provinces to deal with the matters. So in some instances, Chair, where we find that the expired food was in fact delivered by a service provider. We often terminate those service providers. We've recently terminated a service provider in Limpopo province because of that. And then we continue to do ongoing, provide ongoing support to, you know, to the provinces and to those schools directly. We work, currently work with two private sector partners, Nestle as well as Unilever, to provide ongoing support to the 56,000, mostly women, that work on the program as volunteer food handlers. We work with them in terms of preparing meals, food safety, and to ensure that they can identify when, you know, expired food is in fact delivered to the school. then to deal with the question asked by the chairperson in terms of, with, you know, the NSNP is open or not, we've been having meetings, chairperson, with the provinces since last year. We've made it very clear that the program is in fact open. We do get reports from time to time of learners who either say that they've gone to school and the meal wasn't ready, and we follow up on each one of those. So if the chairperson can make available the name of that school and the province, we can certainly follow up and ensure that everybody must understand that the program is in fact open. We, unfortunately, you know, our greatest strength is really when our system is open. And so part of why I think the Council of Education Ministers made the decision for us to try to return to normality as soon as possible is so that we are in a position to deliver these services to all our children at all times. So currently, because of the rotational system, learners that are not at school, they can go to school and collect their meals. And we've communicated this to, you know, to all of our schools. And so I would be keen to follow up so that we can ensure that learners are able to access their meals at all times, Chair. Can I now invite, maybe we start with Mr. van der Westhuizen, just in terms of the slow spending on the education backlogs grant. David?
Good morning to all the honourable members, and good morning to Dr. Whittle and the Deputy Minister. Just a few quick comments on the infrastructure programme. Last year was really a tough year in the construction sector. With quarter one, we had total lockdown, all construction ground to a halt, and all the contractors went home. When we moved into quarter two, we started to have some opening up of the restrictions, and people were allowed to go back to site, but still very restricted. The numbers were restricted, and there were also restrictions on the movement between provinces. And we found that there were elements of the construction team that were moved back to home, and home being in a different province, that they couldn't return. So it was still, quarter two was still extremely low, but we had some construction picking up. So the real construction only started in quarter three. So by the end of quarter three, we started to see the move rising up. And I think Carol shared those figures with you. And a lot of contractors we convinced to work through the Christmas break or the builder's break. And the real construction picked up speed in the fourth quarter, which is then January, February, March. And when we report on quarter four, you will see that we have five targets on infrastructure. So on the inappropriate structures, we actually exceeded the target. On the water supply, we exceeded it only just. We had a target of 100. We achieved 101. On the COVID water supply, we exceeded the target. On the COVID sanitation, we exceeded the target. The one where we really battled was on the SAFE program or the ICD sanitation. We had a target of 600, and we achieved just under 300 of those. And what we found is that the effect of COVID, apart from the lockdown and restricting people to work, it also had a severe impact on the financial, let's call it the resilience of the contractors. The bigger contractors survived better. The bigger contractors, typically those involved in the building of schools, they came back quicker, they came back onto speed quicker, But the small contacts that we employ for the sanitation project, they really battle. And we found that a lot of them simply had no cash. When they came back on site, they had no cash to pay the staff. They had no cash to pay the suppliers. And there are several incidents where the implementing agents had to intervene and to make direct payments to suppliers or even subcontractors. So the good news is, and in terms of the expenditure, it shot up past 1 billion, and the CFO can report on what was the actual figures at the end of quarter four. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. van der Westhuizen. And Mr. Pariachi?
Thank you, Acting DG. Good morning to the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. There's two questions. One's in relation to the reasons for the teaching post not being filled and what's the mitigation. Basically, this report is for the third quarter, which is actually the fourth term of the school calendar, which means the school year would come to an end. Provinces do have specific dates in which they do issue vacancy lists, or otherwise known as bulletins, but they do also fill posts during the year based on when that vacancy does arise. Now, in the fourth quarter itself, there are not many posts that are filled. In fact, when the bulletins or vacancy lists are out, it's more for the new academic year that they are filling these for. However, while there's also an onerous process in terms of how the posts are to be filled, and it involves governing bodies in that instance, and there are delays in that respect. So provinces also use temporary contracts to ensure that there is no learner or groups of children that are left without educators. So you would find, if you look at the fourth quarter, you'd find more posts filled. But however, in the system itself, to use an example, we have approximately about 2,000 schools which have acting appointments. But then provinces also using these things to manage their compensation of employees' budget as well. But as a department nationally, we are tracking these, and that vacancies will always exist in the system as long as there's no learner without a teacher in some form. But they need to be reasonable, and that's what we're working towards in that respect. So these are some of the reporting, tracking through Purcell, as well as there's information or times we receive from parents and school communities as well, which we then intervene with the provincial department. The second question was related to the education assistance and loan numbers. Again, this project started in, some of the preparations was in November, and appointments commenced in December, but all provinces were not on board, and then we had to close for schools in on December 15th itself. So in the case of the Eastern Cape, we find that Eastern Cape used Purcell. So at the time of the end of that quarter, all the capturing had not been done as well. However, if you look at when we will come back for the fourth quarter, and even when we report on the entire program, Eastern Cape did get to its basic number that was allocated, and even exceeded that for other reasons. And a province like Gauteng, which was slow to get going, in fact, truly started the appointment in January. However, you would see in that next report that they increased their number to deal with the fact that they had 1 month's funding that hadn't been fully utilized. So this report is as of the 1 month that the program had been up. All provinces were not evenly, at the same stage for different reasons in respect of the fact that at school level, some schools didn't complete their processes. Also, we were coming to the end and we moved into the holiday season. So even at the offices, some of the processes were not completed. So I think our fourth quarter report will show a fuller picture of what it looks like, as well as how we had made up in respect of ensuring that all of the EAs and even more were given job opportunities. Thank you, Dr. Whittle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pariachi. Ms. Gaya?
Thank you very much, Acting DG. and good morning to all the honourable members. I'll start off with the ECD question. The question was asking whether we would meet the new deadline of 2022. You know, have we found ways to mitigate the challenges of the past? Yeah, and we are on track with many of the things that need to start the process, which we were unable to do last year. This process sits between two departments, and in social development they kick-started, and then, you know, there are things which we have to do on the side of DBE to receive it. So where we are and what we are hopeful of that it will go better this time around to meet the challenge of 1 April 2022 is that the proclamations of past our minister, she has signed, the DSD's minister has also signed the proclamation. It's currently with the DPSA minister, and then it goes to the presidency. And we track this on a weekly basis. And we are confident that we will be able to, the president will be able to sign the proclamations in the next month, which then kickstarts the process for the funding, to help us with the funding cycle. We need to have entered into the funding cycle by for the latest July. And we already are meeting with the Treasury to kickstart that process and to ensure that we don't miss the budget cycle to allow the funding to move over by 1 April 2022. And then once the proclamations have been signed, it then allows for the HR aspect. The HR aspect are dealing with issues around moving human capital, and that's normally the more difficult part of what we have to do. That process is within the PSCBC, and we have to consult labor in terms of how that goes. But if we have the proclamation signed soon, it will then facilitate the movement of the staff. There are some complexities around it, but because we track this on a weekly basis, we believe that this time round we will do much better than in the past. And we also have a process that we have put in place where we are able to elevate you know, some difficulties to the two DGs and also to the ministers. So, in short, we are a lot more confident about the migration process happening within the time frames that we had agreed to this time round. COVID-19 did affect last year in terms of what we were having, and that largely was the reason why some of these processes, especially the budget cycle, in the hard lockdown, it made it very difficult for us to meet the process. So that's where we are on ECD. On issues of LTSM and which quarter do we deliver? So in an ideal situation, we normally deliver in quarter three, which is the last quarter of the academic year. Where there are difficulties to have achieved that because of problems with, you know, either the orders were placed late or the publishers had difficulties printing, then it goes over into quarter four, which is the first quarter of the academic year. Now, in this year, this past year, again, with COVID, there were some difficulties around paper, some serious difficulties in the country around sufficient paper that had a knock-on effect on publishers being able to print the LTSM, in particular the textbooks, the top-up of the textbooks. And so in provinces like Eastern Cape, to some extent Limpopo, they were late in the top-up orders, but they played catch-up in that they worked throughout the December to try and ensure that they you know, meet the targets, and they started with the deliveries of the top-up. So they In the fourth quarter, the report, you know, you'll see the progress that happens there. But that was just what that question was asking. And then in relation to, there was another question here. In relation to the issues around the laptops and how many have been retrieved, so the provinces are the ones who actually issue the laptops, and we don't have information about how many have been retrieved from the matriculants, but we can make such a request and provide that information, you know, once we receive it from the provinces. In terms of just how we do the online learning and track that, so there's a lot of what we are doing that that we have, you know, put out. We have monitoring instruments that we have developed to look at how we track, you know, the effectiveness of how the learning happens. And those tools that are utilized gives us the picture of the extent to which, you know, we have a success rate. There are some difficulties around, which remain around access. And the access issue is around not only that well, we were caught with the problem of COVID. And so we had to find very innovative ways very quickly. And in a classical sense, we would not have been so over relying on the online learning and the issuing of devices. So COVID had forced us to look very critically at how we expedite that. And going forward, that is what provinces have indicated in their budgets. So in the years to come, you will see a better picture than in this, you know, when we're looking back on this financial year. But what we did look at was a hybrid model of how we not only have the devices, but also that we provide information in various ways through either TV or radio or even printed materials that we you know, support materials that help the learner. So we looked at various options of how we do it. And it wasn't solely about just the devices. And the reasons for that is that in very rural areas, the infrastructural facilities are not there to be able to provide the online learning or the devices. You'd have to still use printed material because they just don't have the tower to be able to allow for them to have that. So there are some complexities which is not solely dependent on the department. It is about how communications, the Department of Communications speeds that up to be able to have the infrastructure available for us to really maximize on using those facilities. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Those are the responses.
Ms. Gaya, the question on the percentage of content that is digitized, are you able to respond to that or Dr. Simelane?
No, I can't give you that information. I don't have a percentage.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Simelane?
Thank you. DG, good morning to Deputy Minister and honorable members. I think we will provide the percentage of the content that has been digitized. Maybe if the honorable chairperson could allow, we could provide that maybe in writing as a follow-up response. Because the digitization of the content is actually done by our e-learning subdirectorate under Brains B, but we are working together and very closely, so we could be able to also provide the response to that. It's information that one doesn't have offhand. But maybe to the question that was asked by the Honorable Chairperson about how the performance of basic education as a department translate to performance at school level? I will try to respond from curriculum and assessment perspective. Honorable members will be aware that on an annual basis, basic education actually compiles an evidence-based report. This is where we present all the efforts that we put together with provincial departments to provide support to learners, particularly at FET and more specifically for grade 12 learners, to improve their performance in their final national senior certificate examination. Without getting into a detailed breakdown of the details captured into that report, I'm just going to highlight a few interventions. For instance, within the COVID-19 space, what we've done is, as DPE, we have actually done the trimming of the curriculum, trimming and reorganization of the curriculum in all subjects for grades R to grade 11, making sure that the focus in the classroom will simply be on the core content so that we eliminate any content for enrichment. We've also developed, given the loss of teaching and learning time that we experienced in 2020, we have developed a curriculum recovery plan, which is a three-year plan starting from this year through to 2023. Making sure that we plug all the gaps that opened in 2020. We also develop material. Examples could be in the form of study guides for high enrollment subjects, and we distribute those materials to districts and schools. We also provide guidelines and circulars to guide the implementation of the curriculum and assessment programs up to school level. For instance, one set of the guidelines that we produced last year, when schools returned to functioning, was a set of guidelines that we developed for teachers to make sure that we guide our teachers in terms of being able to teach the annual teaching plans that we had trimmed and reorganized to make sure that we also strengthen the professional judgment in focusing on what will be the core in the subjects that they teach. We also developed even guidelines for parents in terms of how they could benefit from the support from schools as their children could be continuing to learn from home for various reasons. And we also do monitor on a quarterly basis. We monitor learner performance through our national through our NSLA, which is the framework for monitoring the performance in various programs on a quarterly basis to make sure that we can then follow up with support. And finally, we also on a continuous basis build capacity to strengthen the implementation of school-based assessment so that there is a progressive improvement in terms of the quality of school-based assessment that is administered by teachers. And maybe I will conclude my input, Honorable Chair, by indicating that we also monitor and support the extra classes, including autumn, winter, as well as spring classes, for instance, directed at FET. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Simelane. Mr. Mpanza, are you able to deal with the question of how many learners are left without birth certificates? Mr. Mpanza?
Thank you. Good morning, Acting DG. Morning, Honorable Members of Parliament. Acting DG, we have approximately 300,000 learners who are, according to our records, they don't have ID numbers. But I must caution, Chair, that this 300,000, we also have learners who don't present their birth certificates when they're enrolled at school. So the number, this number does not mean that all of them, they don't have ID numbers, but some of them, they don't present their birth certificates when they enroll at school. Others, you find that the school don't capture this information, but approximately it's plus minus 300,000. But this number has come down because previously the number was close to 700,000, but we've signed a protocol with Home Affairs that, which enabled the two departments to work together to address the undocumented learners. We have that protocol was signed in 2012. So for the last 5 years, we've been working very closely with Department of Home Affairs to address undocumented learners. Also now we have a committee which is led by Deputy Minister from our side and Deputy Minister from Home Affairs, where that deals with this issue of undocumented learners. But I must also indicate, Chair, that what we're picking up is that we see more and more learners now doing matric without ID numbers. And when you track, you find that these are foreign learners who arrived without proper documentation. So we provide the information to Home Affairs because the immigration section need to deal with this matter. That's because the priority at this stage now are prioritizing matriculants, because if you write matric without ID number, then your certificate will not show an ID number, which will make that certificate to be worthless. So that's my input, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mpanza. And then lastly, Chairperson, Mr. Kuno.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the spending on the infrastructure, I see the grant. Whereas as at the end of the third quarter, we had spent just over 33%. By year end, we spent more than 67%, although we're still finalizing the year end, the financials and doing journals and all that. So, but as at today, the spending is, as at our calculations, with regards to the overspending on the operational budget, what happened was that when COVID hit us and we realized that we may underspend on things like traveling venues and facilities, and we didn't have a new budget for COVID, we allocated, we moved some 281 million to cover COVID expenditure. But in the meantime, because there was no new money, that spending on the operational budget then went over the budget that we had left remaining in the ops budget. As I indicated in the presentation, at the end of the year, we've now done what we call adjustments and environments to cover that expenditure, such that with the year-end report, that the overspending has leveled out. We don't have overspending on the operational budget. The underspending on projects, there's quite a number of projects that we could not undertake, like South African Coral at Stratford, DG engagement. We normally now and then or every year would have the Kotla. Some of these or all these things that would have required us to hire facilities, hire venues, go out into the provinces, did not take place, and they fall under projects. So that's why we've got the underspending on projects. I'm not sure if I've covered everything, but those are the notes I had made. If there's any follow-up, I'll check it. Thank you, Chair.
There's just one more, Mr. Kuno. Are you able to provide an update on the status of the Bella Bill for Honorable Bosoff?
We are not in view in that we are still as we're finalizing it. There's more and more consultations or more and more questions that are coming up, but we're at the tail end. I can't say specifically when we will finalize, but we are at the tail end of that process, Chair, through you. But
okay.
In the same way that Dr. Simelane has mentioned, I think we could maybe give a properly written update on that if the Chair allows. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Mr. Kuno. The Chair can obviously guide us in terms of that, but I think that's probably the best way to provide a proper update to Honorable Bosoff. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That concludes our responses.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Kawito, and all the officials that have responded to the issues that were raised by members. I think it's only two issues that we agree you will give us in writing. It's the update that is asked by Honorable Bosoff, and also the digitization of the content that was asked by Honorable Nodada. So those are the two issues that you would have to respond in writing to the committee. Members, we are fine. I don't see any other hand. Those are the responses from the department.
Except my hand.
Is there a hand?
Of the DM, yes.
Oh, are you back? DM, okay. No, it's fine. I can give you then. All right.
My apologies because I didn't disconnect. Then I just left it in the car during the vaccination. I have vaccinated colleagues. Those who are above 60, please, let's go register. Babungobo. Yeah, the elders, let's go and vaccinate. I vaccinated, I'm still the same. But thank you, Chair, for this meeting and the responses. I was going to say on the statistical information will come again, but I'm happy that the officials indicated as such. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Okay. No, then that is fine. We are in agreement as far as that is concerned, Honorable DM. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for presentation of quarter three. We are fine, and we appreciate, like we have said, many members have appreciated your content that you have presented. we will see you next week, and that will of course be the last meeting for this quarter. That is fine. Then DM and Dr. Whittle, you can leave us in the meeting. We will just deal with committee matters.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson, and bye-bye.
Please.
What is that?
Where are you going now? Are you the department?
No. I'm taking them out.
Oh, that is your duty, I forgot.
Yeah, I'm walking these people out. They can't just walk alone like that. On the African day.
No, I forgot.
Thank you, Chair. I'm back.
You must go for a vaccine.
Yes, man, that injection, man, it's too long.
You must go for a vaccine because we've got an oversight very quick.
Where? What is the venue?
Western Cape.
Yeah, no, Western Cape, I can go. Hey, how dare you?
When is that oversight, sir?
Hey, sometime during the third quarter. They are still working on those logistics.
We're campaigning, yeah, so we must be careful.
Asuka, we will go to Western Cape. We are not afraid.
West Cape is your power base. You better go there.
You must come here when we are done consolidating. We're done consolidating, Prince Boy.
Yeah, but not that. But anywhere else, you will never see the dawn of the day. You must see, you can find yourself to mess up.
You see?